This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
Wingardium Leviosa.
Now on, you do as I do.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Herring, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, I'm Amanda, and with me today is my awesome, hilarious, and full of stories of when she puked as a child co-host, Moni. Hey.
I mean, hey, I have more stories of when I puked as a child, I'm sure. Can't think of them. But yeah, hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I was doing great until you shared all the puke stories. Now I kind of regret how this conversation even happened. But yeah, other than that, I'm pretty okay.
And why are you pretty okay?
You feel almost responsible.
No.
I feel almost responsible for making you like feel sick to your stomach with all of my puke stories. Like,
well, I feel like almost, I didn't though. Bring it up, did I? We just landed there in the flow of the conversation somehow.
The flow,
I was not gonna point it out, but you did so. But it's also a wonderful and amazing and in general just epic day because.
We have a guest.
Where? With us today is the one, the only, the amazing, the glorious Ed Nightingale. I tried.
Hello.
I'm not as good as other people.
Hello.
Welcome to Geek Herring. Welcome to the shit show.
Thank you for having me. Genuinely, I'm really honored to be here. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to have you. That's the truth.
Oh, shush.
You have been on our like Trello board of upcoming episodes for a very long time, and we're like, we should ask Ed.
True.
We should ask Ed. This is the time. Ask Ed now.
It sounds like we were not prepared, but it's true that we talked about having you on for ages, and then we took a break, and then now we're back. So this
and you're
is
our
the time.
First interview after our like 8-month-long hiatus.
I'm the first. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm truly honored. So thank you. Thank
yeah.
you. I hope I've got something interesting to say.
Oh, I think you
always
will.
Yes. Exactly.
Do you want to tell our listeners who you are a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm Ed Nightingale, known as Ed_Knights. And I am a video game journalist on Eurogamer and also a Twitch streamer, which is how I met both of you and various other people in the chat and online. So yeah, just writing about games, playing games and being gay on the internet.
Basically living the dream.
Yeah. As much as I can.
I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's just, I think for some people, it feels like something massively, like, look at this person is, like, their entire life is kind of focused around all of that cool thing that we do for fun, right? But, I mean, it's still work.
It's definitely still work, yeah. It's one of those things where, yeah, I'm really lucky that I do something that I love for my job and an area that I'm really interested in, but it's still work. You know, my previous work was in the music industry, and I loved music and fell out of love with music because I worked in it and it became work. I'm hopeful that doesn't happen with gaming.
Yeah, because everything really hard lost. Where does the job end and the fun start, like when is it a hobby and when is it work? So I feel like it must be really difficult.
The line is at about 5 o'clock when I will move from this seat to the seat in the lounge where I will then just start playing PlayStation, which is kind of work, but also fun. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Cool.
Shall we move into our rapid fire round and we'll just shout questions at you and you answer them as quickly as you can?
Okay, let's go. Let's focus.
Okay. Where are you from?
London. Well, not originally, but I live here now.
Okay, well, good answer. We'll take it. What are your pronouns?
He, him.
And when are you a geek since? So a year, maybe a story of a first geeky experience?
Oh, I mean, if we're talking video game geeks, then I've been a geek since I was 6, 7, when I first got a Sega Master System with Sonic the Hedgehog. And
Were you an initial Sega person?
Yeah, I was obsessed with Sonic the Hedgehog. So that was me. I used to draw pictures of Sonic all the time. I wrote stories about Sonic. I had Sonic t-shirts. Like Sonic was my life. So yeah, that was what, 6, 7, something like that. And that's what got me into gaming.
You wrote stories about Sonic. That's adorable.
Sonic the comic. Exactly. Sorry, that was Tom in chat. Yeah, I used to read Sonic the comic. Loved that. I had so many editions of that on my bookshelf.
Aww. Amazing.
Tom is also a massive Sonic fan, so you guys can geek out about it sometime.
Absolutely.
And what are some of your biggest influences? So you can think like books, movies, TV shows, teachers, games, anything else that comes to mind?
Ooh. I mean, yeah, I guess in terms of gaming stuff, like I've always loved fantasy and also sci-fi. I think that, I mean, and that's the same when it comes to like TV, film, books, everything. Like that's, I love those things for escapism. You know, I don't want to read about real life because that's boring. I want to go to a fantasy land in the future or the past or whatever and, you know, an escape and be someone else. So anything like that, you know, Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, those sorts of things. Like gaming wise, it's Zelda, it's Final Fantasy. That's the kind of stuff that I love.
Nice. Me too. Do you have a favorite? Like, top favorite? Like, what would you pick out? It's like, this is it. This is my favorite thing ever. I know it wasn't on the list. I'm just throwing you in it.
I am tempted to say The Hobbit because, and I hate the film, by the way. The film is absolutely dreadful. But it's probably my favorite book. And I love that it's kind of like a kid's fairy tale, but also for adults. And I just feel like Tolkien is just like the daddy of fantasy. Like everything that we know of in terms of gaming and films and like, you know, D&D and all that kind of stuff. It all ultimately comes back to Tolkien in some way. So I think for that reason, I love him as a writer. He's not always the easiest writer to read. The Hobbit is really easy. I've reread that many times. Lord of the Rings, I've read once and it is dense. And really hard. I tried to read The Silmarillion once and really, really struggled. But that's why I love The Hobbit, because it is easier to read and understand. And I just think it's a really fun fairy story.
Mm-hmm. I really like it as well. But I do like the movie. I'm sorry. I'll see myself out of the room.
I just wish it had been one really strong movie. I don't like that they split it into a trilogy. Because, like, the last chapter is one film. No, there's just so much padding in it. And the way they tried to link it back to Lord of the Rings really irritated me. I just wanted it to be one good standalone film. And then I would have loved it.
That would have been good. I agree.
Are we talking about The Hobbit now?
Yeah.
It's just really fucking annoying when they drag out films just so that they're fucking trilogies, even if it's not necessary.
Sorry. Yeah.
Just to throw that in there. Right. Like, it's because the sole reason they fucking do it is so that they can make more money, and it's just annoying.
Yeah. I mean, the latest one for that is the Wicked film that's based on the musical, and that's being split into two films. And I'm like, why? It's not that
exactly.
long.
Exactly.
You can easily do that as one film. And yeah. The fact that they're a year apart, is there such a long wait? Like, why?
That's the thing.
Just do it like after a couple of months or something.
Exactly. It's also just, and it's just because it's so obvious that it's only for money reasons. Mm-hmm. It's what's annoying me more. Like, if there would be other reasons why it would make some kind of sense, I would be okay. But like this year kind of wait when they obviously all have it all done already, and it's just all for money reasons, and it's just fucking annoying. But anyway. Yeah,
completely.
That's a slide.
And last question of our rapid fire round. What are some of your current geeky pastimes?
Ooh. Well, I mean, gaming is always a geeky pastime for me at all times. I guess streaming as well is my current geeky pastime, which is sort of a new-ish thing for me since last August, I want to say. Something like that. At least I've been streaming on my own. And so, yeah, I guess slowly getting into streaming and understanding streaming culture and community and meeting people and then going to TwitchCon in a couple of months' time, sort of preparing for that. I think streaming is a really good way of finding a geeky community, of doing the stuff you love, be it gaming or talking about gaming or whatever else, and meeting people. I've grown to really love Twitch, which a couple of years ago I had no idea what it was, and now it's really become quite a big part of my life now, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think that can be said for me and Moni as well. The way it's just,
ain't that the truth,
cemented itself in our lives, especially Moni. That was
I feel a bit called out here.
No, it was me. It was like, you are very much more involved, and I've kind of taken a step back
But now that my streamer stopped streaming so regularly, I feel like I'm floating around in space. which is no shade or whatever, which is totally fine. But I'm this, like, if you lose that anchor point, then it gets weird. Mm. But obviously everything else is totally subscribed to.
Well, I'm glad that Twitch brought us all together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's very true.
Twitch brings all sorts of people together. And it's people from all around the world as well. Exactly. And it's lovely that with something like TwitchCon, it's literally people from all around the world who are all coming together in one place, which is great. I'm excited to meet everyone.
Me too. I don't think I will be able to emotionally deal with it, but me too. Because this will definitely be the first time after, 2.5 years? 3 years? I don't even fucking know. To see people.
Too long.
Mm-hmm. And I'm already overwhelmed thinking about it. Like, just because I'm like, it feels like this is something I've been waiting forever. Like, which is not true. It's just me being over dramatic and exaggerating. And now it's happening. And I'm like, where do I put all the emotions that I've carried for 2.5 years? It's going to be great.
Also, but 2 days just isn't long enough. Like, there are so many people that I want to see, so much to cram in. I'm like, 2 days is not long enough. Which means we'll just have to do it again.
It's true. And I would like to formally request that Moni arrives and meets the Belfast contingent at the airport with a sign. What?
Listen. Wow. I mean, this is a dig at me right now because, and I will have to tell the story, because when we met again, was it Budapest the first time we met? Yes, it was. Yeah. So the first time Amanda, Tom, and I met was in Budapest. I was there with a car because it's not like super fucking far away from me. And I offered to pick them up from the airport, right? So, but what I also hadn't planned was to make a welcome sign, which I took everything with me and then we painted, I drew it in the apartment that I had, and it kind of took me too long to draw it. And then I was late. So they were already waiting there, and I just ran with the sign to the thing, and they didn't even see it. And it had an amazing cow on it, and it did everything, but they didn't even see it. Yeah, because the thankful cow is their business name, so I drew like a cow on it and all, and they never saw it. And then they are offended because I was late, but I was only late because traffic was shit in Budapest, and it took me too long to finish that fucking sign that they never saw.
I mean, Moni, if you could meet everyone with a sign, that would be great. I've always wanted to be one of those people that gets off a plane that's like, Mr. Nightingale, we're waiting for you. And I'm like, yes, that's for me.
You know that my sign was not like an A4 paper kind of sign. It was like this proper white paper kind of sign. So my only issue with that is, number one, don't tempt me. And number two, well, that just got me thinking. Never mind.
I'm tempting you, Bonnie. You will be tempted.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways, we should get back to the reason that we're here, I guess.
Which is, in reality, is just to talk with Ed, because Ed's great. Yeah. But we do have a reason why we have Ed here.
Mm-hmm. What is it, Bonnie? Oh. Tell us.
Sorry, I was just distracted because Tom was giving me pointers, and I'm like, what ideas does he have? Never mind. So we have you on because, number one, you're amazing. And number two, you're, as you've mentioned before, don't look like that. It's true. Take a compliment, man.
I cannot take compliments. I'm British. I can't do it.
I'm going to make you feel so uncomfortable. and as you've mentioned before, you're like a games journalist and you're gay, and in your stories and in the articles you write, you focus a lot on diversity and inclusivity and all the good things and all the things that we need. So tell us maybe why you wanted to become a games journalist, how your journey was to that, and how you ended up where you are now?
A long journey, I guess. I mean, I feel like I came to games journalism quite late. I feel like it's something that a lot of people jump into, you know, quite young, from university or something like that. You know, gaming as an industry is generally aimed at younger people. So I feel like games journalists tend to be a bit younger. Whereas my background is actually in music more than anything. Talking about geeky stuff, you know, I was the music geek back at school. I was in every choir, I was in every orchestra, every band. Mm-hmm. I did not have a lunchtime or an afternoon free that wasn't music related. Because I was singing and everything and playing guitar and flute and whatever else. So I, from there, went to university and did music. And then I did a master's in music and drama. And then I moved to London and started working in the music industry. And I did that for 10 years. And not ukuleles, though, unfortunately. They were not... that's not what I went for.
Did you say unfortunately? I feel I heard unfortunately here.
There was no unfortunateness about it.
Ukuleles are awesome.
Well, come on, Ed. Tell us how you really feel about ukuleles. There is a wonderful clip of you praising them.
Then it's been said. I can't possibly say that again.
It's true, because you were probably a bottle of wine in.
Exactly. So I wanted to work in the music industry, and it kind of made sense to me from my background to say, right, I'm going to work in music. That's what I really loved. But what I also did when I started that, or just before I started that, was I started a blog when I was living in Manchester after my master's. And once I moved to London, I carried that on. And basically, I was bored and I wanted something to do. And I started watching films and reviewing them. And I started listening to music and reviewing it and put it all on a blog. And then when I moved to London, I started doing a lot more theatre reviewing. London has a really thriving fringe theatre scene, like pretty much almost every other pub in London has like a black box theatre upstairs that you can go and watch Fringe Theatre in. And I went round and started reviewing them all, got free tickets, eventually got some West End shows and got to review them. And actually that's really where I sort of cut my teeth on reviewing, really, was writing about theatre more than anything. And I think I was always interested in gaming, but I never saw that as sort of serious journalism in a way. You know, I was always looking at ways of writing about music or ways of writing about theatre, because that's what I'd done, you know, growing up. And things kind of took a change when I decided to take things a little bit more seriously. I was actually made redundant from a job, and because I'd been in it for a few years, I got a nice little payout from it. So I thought, right, I'm going to invest that in something useful. So I put it towards a journalism qualification, which I did part-time for a year. And sorry, I feel like I'm talking through my CV now. I did that for a year, which was an NCTJ. Don't ask me what that stands for. National something training in journalism, I think.
National
I got that.
Training in journalism?
Maybe. I don't know. I just went through it and got the qualification and ran away. So I did that for a year. And then from there, carried on working in music, but started doing freelancing and games journalism. Because I just thought, you know what? What am I interested in? Actually, I'm interested in gaming. So why not write about that? And my first published article was in Kotaku, or Kotaku UK, which no longer exists. Which... I've actually got it framed because I'm a loser. My friend did it for me.
Oh, that's so
this was
so
the article
cool.
I did.
So cute.
Which is in defense of Final Fantasy 15's Chapter 13, which is... if anyone's played Final Fantasy 15, it's not a great game. And Chapter 13 is absolutely terrible. But I wrote a sort of incendiary piece saying that I thought it was great, which was a total lie. but it got noticed. So that was for Kotaku, and that was nice. And then I thought, right, I need to do more freelancing. I need to build on this. And I was really struggling for ideas of what to write about, because gaming's such a huge topic. People think, oh, you're a games writer, you know about everything. But like, that it's such a huge topic. You know, just because I write about gaming doesn't mean that I know about all of the top games and play everything. Like, you know... film journalists or music journalists, they specialize in one area, you know. Gaming seems so broad. There's no way you can do everything. So I was thinking, okay, well, what's my niche? You know, what can I do here? And I just thought, well, what am I interested in? You know, I'm interested in gaming. I'm gay. I like drag queens. What can I do with that? And I basically just thought, fuck it. I'm going to pitch to The Guardian. So I pitched to The Guardian a piece called Shantae You Play, which was about the drag queens of gaming. And I interviewed four different drag queens who were involved in gaming a different way, two of which were Twitch streamers. So there was Dia and Drag Trashly. And that essentially introduced me to Twitch, because I had no idea what Twitch was. I thought, why do you want to watch people play games? I'd rather play games myself than watch someone else's terrible gameplay. And I've since realized that it's way more than just that. But back in the day, that's what I thought it was. And so that kind of got me, you know, into the sort of LGBT gaming scene, really. And I realized, well, hang on, that's my niche. And I got there because I guess ultimately I just embraced who I am. And I thought, I'm just, you know, they say write about what you know. And I thought, well, this is what I'm interested in. And, you know, I got to a point where I had come out and embraced my sexuality and was like, I'm going to put that into my work. And that just introduced me to this whole sort of LGBT gaming niche. And from there, I was like, I'm going to ride this wave. And I started writing for Gaming Magazine. That's when I then had a column interviewing Twitch streamers. And gradually that led me to writing for Pink News. And now for Eurogamer, where, you know, I bring a lot of that diversity with me, despite being a white man still. You know, I'm very much interested in diversity and inclusion. That's stuff that I was really involved in my previous job. Working in the music industry, I was the chairperson of the LGBT Society and was really heavily invested in D&I. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to bring that to my writing and bring that out there. So, yeah, I guess ultimately I got to where I am because it took a long time to get there, but I just kind of embraced who I am and decided to put that into my writing, and that really helped me. That was a really long answer. I'm sorry.
As if one could... I thought I couldn't like you anymore, but here we are.
Yeah, honestly.
Oh, God. Why are you the best? This is so interesting. It's such an interesting story. I feel this is such a wonderful summary of one, like, being some kind of multi-potentialite, right? Because, like, you know a lot of things, you can do a lot of things, you're interested in a lot of things, and you combine the things into one and make this your unique superpower kind of thing, right? And I just think it's just such a wonderful, wonderful story.
Thanks. It took lot of hard work and depression to get there. Yeah. banging your head against the wall, being like, I really want to do this, and I'm just freelancing, and I'm not happy in my main career, and I want to make my second career my main career, and how do I do that? And, you know, having to take a pay cut to do what I actually want to do because it makes me happy despite not earning as much. And it's been a long journey, but I am very happy with where I am now.
Jinx says
you're inspiring, and I agree.
Yeah. Aww.
Thank you.
And it's just, you're just getting freaking started, right? I feel part of the journey, we've known each other in a way, right? Because when we knew each other, you were still not actually when we got to know each other, you were not actually working at Pink yet. So I feel like part of, and so this is really the beginning of your journey right now, right? And it's just...
Yeah, it was the start of last year that I started at Pink. So it's only been, I guess, almost a year and a half that I've been full time in games journalism. I've been freelancing before that for a good 3-4 years. So yeah. It was a really slow build to get to this point. Mm-hmm. And I guess, yeah, I tend not to look backwards, but sometimes you do look backwards and you realize that step and that journey of how that actually happened, which is kind of nice to think about.
But I feel if you look backwards, you see, I feel it gives you some kind of perspective also, that when you look back at the times where you felt so shit, right, and everything was, and then you think, how can I ever get out of this? And then look a couple of months later, everything is different and you're in a totally different place and with totally different people and do totally different things, and then you thought you would never get out of this spot because it's so horrible, but that was like part of what you needed to then get to the place that you're now. So I feel like, yes, looking back can be sad, but it can also show you, look, I needed this to get to here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of the topics that you've been writing about for Pink News and for Eurogamer that are more in the diverse and inclusive issues?
Yeah, I mean, with Pink, pretty much everything, it's an LGBT publication. So pretty much everything I did, was geared towards that community. And my freelance writing was sort of geared towards that as well. I think I have branched out a little bit more into, I guess, general diversity and inclusion. I sort of hate that as a phrase because diversity feels like it's picking out difference, and actually it's about bringing people together. But I think, you know, one of the things that I love most about being a writer and being a journalist is having a platform for other people. So I love hearing other people's stories, and I want to hear people's stories from, you know, marginalized communities and minority communities and people that are different, that have something interesting to say. And if I can use my job and my position to give those stories a platform, then that's really interesting to me because I find their stories inspiring and I feel privileged to be able to write about that. So it's those kind of things that I try and pick out, whether that be writing about the LGBT community in gaming, or whether that be, misogyny on Twitch, or, the black Twitch community, or, accessibility is a really big issue at the moment in gaming. So, what can I do to write about that? So they're all areas that I've tried to write about because I just think it's interesting. I don't want to read another story about the latest straight white bro Call of Duty player. I don't give a shit. I want to read about someone who's doing something to make a difference and that's inspiring. And I want to be able to inspire others by writing about their story. So they're generally the topics that I'm drawn to. And I want to be able to write about what I'm interested in, which is nice.
They're good to read as well.
Thank you. So.
True. I do feel you have a remarkable writing style, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I'm not actually a words person, but I feel like they're just like great to read your articles.
Thank you. I mean, I really enjoy the process of writing, but a lot of the time when you're writing like an interview feature, I'm just copying and pasting people's words that they've said. I'm just filling in the dots. And for me, I want my writing to be as sort of concise and as minimal as possible. And that's for the sake of being clear, because that's good journalism. You want to tell a story, you want to get to the point. But also I want that other person's words to shine. It's not about me, it's about their story. So I want their quotes and their words to shine more than mine.
But you say that you're just doing that, but it's that, like, you say that from the standpoint of this being your profession and knowing how to do it and what you do, right? But it needs skill to storytell like this, right? So you can just, there's a difference. Number one, you need to ask the right questions to get the right answer. So that's a skill. Then number two, you need to put all the answers you got together in a way that it also makes sense and that it tells a fucking story, right? So it's not that you just put words from other people on a paper and then you're like, well, I just wrote end and the and that's it. And made a bunch of like quotation marks or whatever shit, which is... isn't true. And it's because, and it's always when, like, as the professionals in the profession, it always seems so trivial when it's not, but everybody else wouldn't be able to, a lot of other people, not everybody else, but a lot of other people and most other people would not be able to do what you do. They would not be able to ask the questions that you ask and do the things you do. So it's not just that, it's because you're a fucking badass.
Thanks,
Moni.
There you go.
If you say so.
Yes. I say so.
Moni always likes to make our guests very uncomfortable with the compliments.
What do you mean?
It's fucking.
So moving swiftly forward, I'll ask you a pre-prepared question. What value do you feel like your work is bringing to the games industry?
None.
Lies.
I like to think I can bring some value. I like to think that I am highlighting, you know, through highlighting those marginalized people and smaller stories, it's, you know, it's making change. That's one of the things that I like about writing for Eurogamer is that it's a specialist gaming site, but the audience is pretty broad and has a broad range of people. So I'm not just writing, as I have in previous pieces, you know, I'm not writing LGBT pieces for LGBT people who, you know, you're preaching to the choir. It's nice to write stories for a broad range of people and to try and educate people a little bit and highlight minority stories. Sometimes the comments are terrible. I've had awful comments in my DMs, but also when you see positive comments and you see a small amount of change, that's lovely. That's a great feeling. And I wish I could bottle that and keep it forever. You know, and I think the games industry needs to change a lot. I think games journalism needs to change a lot. And if I can write about these more diverse topics to try and highlight these people and try and instigate a bit of change, then I'm really happy with that. I mean, that's what we do as journalists, is you highlight stories and you pick out things that maybe need to change. yeah, as Jinx said, you know you're doing well when the haters come out in force. You know, the number of times I've written about women or, you know, the queer community of some of, in some way, and people just write awful things. And that sort of fires me up to write about it more and think, well, if you don't like that, I'm going to keep writing it because it's important, and I'm going to keep writing it until you realize that it's important. Yeah, I think the games industry needs to do a lot of change. And there are a lot more of these stories coming out recently. I mean, you know, the whole Activision Blizzard thing from last year was obviously massive. There are all these stories coming out of, you know, abuse and things in the industry, which is terrible. And, you know, I think gaming is a very young medium compared to other areas, you know, music, theatre, film, we've discussed. Gaming is very young. And a lot of these big companies started out as just a load of straight white bros in a garage coding a game, and they found success and their companies grew, and they didn't really know how to handle that. And they still have that core of this like frat boy culture in the core of their company. And as they've grown and more people have joined, they don't know how to handle that. And that's finally coming out, that they actually have, you know, they need proper HR departments and proper systems to support people. And I think, you know, once people in these studios become more diverse, or all these studios become more diverse with more people, that's going to have a knock-on effect to the actual games. But we're not going to see a change in the games that we're able to write about and the people that we're able to see in these games until the industry itself changes and the people making them. And if that's continuously just straight white bros, that's all we're going to see. So, you know, if I can highlight these topics and interrogate these topics and try and tease these things out a little bit more, then I like to think that I can make a bit of a difference, even just as one lowly journalist on a publication. But, you know, I think journalism itself is changing. There are more diverse writers that are interested in these topics. You know, the fact recently we had the Gaming Magazine Awards, which is awards devoted to LGBT gaming, is great that we've got that there and we've got that representation. And I think we just need to keep doing that. And that's what I really want to try and push in my writing.
I mean, newspapers have always been part of, I mean, education is maybe a tough word, but it's like developing people's opinions in a way, or assisting in developing people's opinions. And a lot of newspapers obviously have like horrible influence on how they're doing it, right? So I feel, and it's not that you just write about it, it's so necessary, because it's especially, just because it's in the gaming scene doesn't mean it's not actually a part of forming culture and how it works, right? Because you it needs to be visible in a way for people to see it, and for people to become more aware of issues. And if nobody writes about it, then it's just like hidden under the carpet and we just don't talk about it. So I think it's just really, really important. And it's not just, I'm just writing my articles and people read it and whatever.
Yeah. I think that's the interesting thing with games journalism, is that journalism as a whole, you know, newspapers, it's where you get your information from. It's about, you know, you have your sources and you lay out the facts and people learn from that. And there are going to be biases because of the writers, but that ultimately is where you get your stuff from. But when it comes to gaming, it's immediately like, gaming isn't political. Why are you writing about this? This isn't interesting. You know, it's all these, you know, gamer bros who just want to hear the facts of what, you know, the latest Fortnite character is or whatever. They don't want to read about games being political, and everything's political. But suck it up and deal with it.
Exactly. That's the thing, right? Everything is political. Like every piece of music is political, every piece of television, every piece of cinema, every piece of whatever theater, all of these mediums are political, and they tell stories. They tell stories of other people. They tell stories of other things, and all of that is political and cultural in a way, right? So even when our like, I'm not interested in this entertainment sector of life or whatever, and I just read autobiographies, and I still I'm thinking, well, but you don't see a lot of other areas that like help you educate yourself in a different way and see other things in a different way, because you can pack so many things in so many stories and so many journeys into all kinds of entertainment, and especially I feel in games it's incredible how you can like make some things more graspable, that's not the word, but like more easier for people to understand, even though they're not personally affected by certain things. So it's just an amazing medium to also deliver all kinds of news and change and different perspectives of people and life and groups and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, gaming is so immersive, and as we said earlier, you know, I like things that are escapism, and sometimes, okay, maybe you don't want escapism to be political, but equally, if you could put me in the position where, I don't know, I can play as Lara Croft, I can be a woman, and I can go and explore tombs, why the hell not do that? Like, that's amazing that I can be somebody else. I don't want to be myself or someone like me. I want to be someone different.
Now, we're also seeing games companies, like today, I'm going to say this right. Is it Bungie or Bungie? The ones that produced it. Bungie, thank you. They tweeted today standing up for women's reproductive rights and why it's so important, you know, to support women and bodily autonomy and everything. And there's been, you know, a lot of pushback on this tweet, like, stick to games. And they just keep, their social media managers and, like, PR people are doing fantastic with this, but they keep coming back and saying, like, women's rights, we have women that work for us, we want them to have their rights, like, and also, like, women's rights are human rights, and, like, they just keep saying this, and they're like, but gaming is political, we need to talk about this stuff, and, like, I just think it's really great that more companies are just standing up for what's right talking about it in a climate where, like, yeah, maybe historically it hasn't been something super talked about, or I don't know. And it's just, I agree, change needs to happen. And this is how it starts, is by people talking about it.
Yeah. Again, I think it kind of comes back to gaming being a very young medium, and the original gaming reviews were done as pieces of technology. You know, I remember reading reviews where it was dividing everything up into graphics, sound, gameplay, and you got a score for each of those things. And it's not considering the context of what is this as a thing. You know, what are the designers trying to say? Because, you know, they might have chosen, you know, a woman as their lead character. That's political. And people didn't see that back in the day. It was just, oh, this is a piece of entertainment and it's techie for teenage boys sat drooling in a bedroom somewhere. And that's not what gaming is now. It's a huge billion-dollar industry that's bigger than anything else. So of course it's going to be seen as being political. And journalism has caught up to that, but the readers of journalism haven't all caught up to that, which then means it's a bit of an uphill battle sometimes with some of the writing that I'm trying to push.
But also, people have nothing better to do than to hate on comments on the internet. Really pathetic anyway, so
favorite pastime.
Yeah, if you have nothing better to do than to ruin somebody's day by being a wanker, then why the fuck are you even, like, there's no benefit to nothing.
Agreed.
Agreed. Just, I don't know, look at the sky or do whatever, go outside, or, and I'm saying that, be sitting at home all day.
My favorite insult was that I heard recently was go outside and touch grass. I was like, that is great, because it's actually like, go outside, get away from the computer and like ground yourself, but also just like play with the grass, because you need some grass time. Yeah. Except for Ed does not need any grass time.
I need a screen break, that's what I need.
That's true.
So have you seen some of the positive impact from what you're writing about? Like, have you seen that in action?
No. I mean, I think from what we were just saying in terms of comments, like, it's me personally focusing on the negative, but also it's always the negative voices are often the loudest ones. Mm-hmm. So it's often those negative comments that you're like, oh, that's the one that gets to me. And I need to teach myself not to see that. But whenever you do see just nice comments and nice feedback, that's the best feeling. You know, some pieces I've done, I did one that was, I spoke to Moni and I spoke to a streamer called Cosimed about asexuality in gaming. And that was a topic that no one is writing about, no one's interested in. And, you know, I think the people I spoke to, not to speak for you, Moni, but the people I spoke to, I think, were really happy to see that representation and to see that out there. Yeah. And to highlight something that is a real minority. Or, you know, I wrote about Black Twitch UK and I got to meet Geeky Cassie and Ebonix recently, who were like, thank you for writing about that. You know, we really appreciate seeing us, you know, online in Eurogamer. So, you know, I it's not down to, you know, me or one person to make big change in the industry. I think collectively as journalists, we can start to generate, you know, change, as has been done in a lot of reporting recently. But yeah, a few bits of nice feedback is always appreciated and always nice to see. And then having Moni compliment me.
As long as it's not to your face.
Yeah, just do it behind my back. That's fine.
I can write you a letter.
Hear what she says about you when you're not here.
What do I say when he's not here?
Well, I won't tell him.
Okay.
Some further.
He's already feeling so uncomfortable.
So we had a question in chat that I think pairs really well with a question that we have here. And it comes from Mr. Millhill. And he wants to know, what's the worst article that you have ever written, in your own opinion?
Oh. I mean, I've written a lot of trash, sure. You know, sometimes there's just something you have to write because it's good for SEO. You know that Google's going to pick it up. It's not very exciting, but you have to just get it done. Or sometimes, you know, you write a news story that you think, oh, that's not going to do very well, I won't put any thought into it, and you just whack it out quickly. And obviously that's the one that gets loads of views. And then I write something that I put loads of time and effort into in a really in-depth interview, and it doesn't get the views. And you're like, okay, well, where's my priority here? But for me, it's more important to focus on what I'm passionate about. And even if it doesn't get views, if people at least give me nice feedback, or, you know, my editors say good job, or friends say to me, oh, I really enjoyed that article, then that's what's important to me. So honestly, off the top of my head, I can't think of like anyone that is particularly bad. I mean, obviously they're amazingly written, all of them. but some Look of the topics might not be the most, yeah. I'm learning. Some of the topics might not be the most interesting. You know, sometimes you've got something that's just really dry, like it's a really like techie businessy kind of thing, and you're like, oh, I'll just whack that out, whatever.
Fair. Very diplomatic answer. I like
it. I tried.
Yeah. And then our last question is, what is your favorite article that you've written, and why is it about Lady D?
I mean, that was a very fun article. I say that there were many Lady D articles,
multiple.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was the meme. So, you know, it was riding that wave of how can we get as many views as possible. But yeah, I did write one that was interviewing Gemma. And we talked about a lot of S&M kink stuff of being stepped on and what would actually happen to you if you're stepped on by Lady D. And that was a very insightful conversation. partly like because of the kink stuff.
Yeah.
Of course. you know, partly because of the kink stuff, and that's always, you know, fun to talk about, but also about, you know, the sort of dominating women in horror. You know, there's a whole past of that, and this game sort of linking into that was a really interesting idea. And a couple of months ago, I then got to interview Maggie Robertson, who was the actress who played Lady D, and I got to actually sort of pool all of those articles together into one interview, which was great. I was really proud of that. Is that my favorite? Maybe. Like, I've written a few that I'm particularly proud of. and I guess back to your previous point of sort of seeing change. I mean, I wrote one article that was about Pepe the Frog and why you shouldn't use that emote in Twitch, because it's a symbol of the far right or the extreme right. And what was lovely was then seeing that shared around Twitch and people saying, like, so here's why you shouldn't use it, and people literally using that as education. And that was really lovely to see. So stuff like that is great. And I like to sort of see the difference that that makes a little bit. I actually wrote a few up here. I put them up on my screen to remind myself, because again, I never look backwards. And then I was like, I've actually written quite a few that I was quite happy with them. I mean, that Guardian one was, I was pleased just with the headline, to be honest. That kind of made, if it wasn't for Shantae You Play, that would not have got through. It was purely down to the headline that got published.
That was a really great headline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, you know, the asexual one I mentioned was really good. I wrote one for Eurogamer last year. I interviewed another streamer called Rudism, who is a streamer from New Zealand. And he does a lot of tinkering with peripherals. I actually wrote a news piece about him earlier this week. He's taken a Fisher-Price toy controller and turned it into an actual working Xbox controller. So it's got like funny buttons and sound effects and stuff like that. And he's modded it internally so he can literally play like Elden Ring with this controller. And so he does all these weird modifications and stuff. And he played the entirety of Dark Souls 3 with one button. So he literally made a button, and it was all done through Morse code. To control what was going on. And obviously Dark Souls is known as incredibly difficult. It's known as not accessible. And he basically played this game as a joke, but also to highlight accessibility. And him saying, look, if I can play this game with one button, then game makers can make much better peripherals that are accessible to people, because so much of gaming is tied to a mouse and keyboard or a controller that is designed for able-bodied people. And that's not accessible for everyone. And actually, if we had more, you know, input methods, it would be accessible to so many more people. And something like Dark Souls that is notoriously difficult, yes, that's partly the challenge of the game. But for some people, it's the challenge of just using a controller. And if he can do that with one button, then why can't we come up with other ways of doing it? And that's a really kind of incendiary argument for a lot of people in the Dark Souls community. But, you know, accessibility is such a hot topic at the moment that I was really privileged to be able to sort of, you know, talk about what he's done and sort of highlight accessibility in games. That's something that is really important. I wrote a similar piece about accessibility in Twitch, which is really interesting for streamers, and how, you know, we should be thinking about these things as streamers, about what we can do to make our streams more accessible. But what is it like as a disabled streamer? And it's things like, yeah, it might be physical disabilities about, you know, how you access games. What games can you even play on stream? Because there might not be accessibility options. Or it might be that maybe you have a chronic illness that means that actually you really struggle to stream regularly. And when so much of streaming is about being regular, having a schedule, and sometimes you have, you know, maybe you're disabled and you're not able to do that, and that's tricky, and maybe you get passed up on sponsorship deals because of that, and that sucks. You know, what can we do as streamers? Maybe we can, it's little things like having closed captions on, or things like when you start a game, and if it's a brand new game, go into the options and show this is what's there. In the accessibility options of the game, because maybe there are disabled people watching that are interested in, oh, actually, I wouldn't have played this, but if I can see that there are accessibility options and I can watch your stream and see that in the options, maybe I'm more inclined to play it. So there are so many little things you can do to help disabled people play games. And that, I think, is just really exciting and really interesting, and is an area that, you know, I think needs to be pushed. So any writing that I can do in that kind of area, I think, is great. So I'm really proud of that stuff. And then, like, more recently, like, I guess I was able to go to the BAFTAs. So I'm really pleased that, you know, I got to go to the BAFTAs and speak to people. And, you know, I got some really nice interviews from that. I got to speak to the Unpacking devs. I got to speak to the Chicory devs, all about, like, mental health in their game, which, again, is another topic that's really important. I got to speak to Jane Perry, who was the voice actress of Celine in Returnal, and we were speaking a lot about the representation of like older middle-aged women in gaming, which is just not seen enough, and is something that is great that they were able to do that in that game. So it was exciting for me to be able to go to the BAFTAs, but also to talk about topics that are more sort of about marginalized people, and were really exciting for me to be able to talk about those things. So yeah, those sorts of things are the sort of articles that I'm really proud of. So to answer your question, there is not one, but there are lots of topics that I am really proud to have been able to write about. And that's the stuff that I really want to keep championing.
Thanks for doing the work.
I try.
We need more people like you in all areas of life, to be honest, not just in games journalism. Oh, man.
All right.
Thank you so much. That was our last
prepared question. Yeah. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
Not that I'd prepared.
Preparation? What are you talking about? But first, where can people find you when they look for you?
You can find me at @ed_knights with an N on Twitch and on Twitter. And I always say with an N because the number of people who spell Nightingale with a K, I'm like, no, it's not a knight in shining armor. It's the bird.
it's the bird.
That's true. Cool. We'll put all that information and a link to your
Muckrack?
Muckrack. So
yeah,
Muckrack.
That.
People are always like, what's that?
We're going to put a link to that.
It's basically a journalism portfolio site. So that like scrubs the internet for anything with my name on it. So it's literally got everything I've written.
See, perfect.
I was going to say Mudbank, and I was like, that is not what it's called. Just fumble around.
Mudbank is also known.
Let's have a mukbang.
I ate my Haribo cola things already. I can't eat on stream.
I've got Haribo in the kitchen.
See? Well done.
Food's a whole other thing that I can get nerdy about. So.
Same. You and Amanda would get along really well with the cooking situation. Mm-hmm. Both are really good cooks, I think. I mean, I've never eaten your food, Ed, but I mean, I see it all the time and I'm very jealous.
Yeah, I don't think I can bring anything to TwitchCon.
No, we're not doing that. We're here there
cook
for fun.
Something in your hotel room.
No. What? This is a very bad advice. Don't cook anything in your bedroom, please.
Cook mac and cheese on the iron.
No. What?
Is that possible?
According we don't want to find internet, it out. Yes. No, the internet
I
is
mean,
not
a cheese
the best.
Toasty, maybe.
It's like cooking an egg on a car cover of the thing, and that's also shit, so don't do it.
It's not hygienic.
We're not going to have a car at TwitchCon.
We do. Mr. Wibble has a car.
Oh, true.
See? We can use Mr. Wibble's car to...
Borrow your car.
We will inform him shortly before it happens. Well, anyway.
Or after.
Or something. Thank you so much for spending your time with us this evening and for sharing
how
amazing you are.
Thanks for listening to me waffle.
You're not waffling.
Anytime.
Two sides of a coin.
If that's waffling, you know, I would take it any day. Also, I really like waffles.
I really want waffles now.
Mm-hmm. So do I. Okay.
Let's all go get waffles, and we'll see you next week. No, in 2 weeks for another amazing episode of Geek Herring.
Bye!
If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.